Let's talk about a couple of travellers. If you have a copy of my co-host's book, Postcards from Elsewhere, you'll know that Graham Reed's father's philosophy was, as far as we know, we're only here once, so we might as well look around. Graham has spent a lot of time looking around and writing about it. The other traveller, Mike Howie, has probably been out of New Zealand more than he's been in it since he left law school 20 years ago. He's earned a living playing piano in Latin America. He's spent a bit of time in the cells in LA. He's escaped a long list of close scrapes using the same fast-talking wit that often gets him into them in the first place. We thought it might be interesting to share a few of their stories and to talk a little bit about the philosophy of travel. So let's start there. Graham, do you get on a plane to somewhere else in the world with any particular attitude?
Just have a good time. You know, I think I've always thought, you know, travel is about that, really, you know. And I'm sure there are people who, you know, adopt a very serious agenda about it, and I don't have a problem with that. But no, for me, no, I just go, I just go out of curiosity. Just go to have a look and you know, take what comes. Very rarely book anything in advance and just turn up in places and, you know, go to bars, talk to people. Talking, listening is a good thing. In terms of preparation, yes, by and large, I do a little bit of preparation. I find that it's useful to know a bit of history. I think that's always a good thing. Local politics, just you know, just so that you know who not to offend. And the other thing too, that when I was going to places in Asia like Taiwan and Seoul and places like that, just before I went, I would kind of look up on the internet what was the kind of popular news item of the day. So that was always a good inroad to you know, start a conversation. You say, oh, I see that drummer in your local rock band, you know, did something nasty with that girl. And people go, wow, you know about this, you know. And so away they go and they start talking. And then they presume a level of interest and intelligence on your part, and that's fine, you know, sort of get in that way.
That sounds like the kind of thing you'd do too, Mike, you being a bit of a news and PR.
Exactly, but I suppose, I mean, why I travel, I suppose, is the unknown and inquisitiveness, and that's what's always driven me and actually taken me away from the, what would Neil Young say, travelling in the ditch, because they're a bit more interesting, those people, but it's the unknown, it's the journey, rather than the destination, without being too trite.
And you've been in South Latin America in particular, would that be where you've spent more time than elsewhere?
Yeah, I really have an affinity, but I love Latin America. I first went there 20 years ago to get out of the States after being there for a few years and having to get a new visa, and discovered Mexico, discovered Spanish, and I now have an apartment in Buenos Aires. So I go there 2-3 times a year. I love it. It's Europe with blood on its hands, South America. It just is, you know, it has this incredible energy about it. I've never seen it anywhere else.
Buenos Aires, they say, is a very adult sort of a city. Is that a fair characterization?
Adult as far as, I suppose, the Argentines, and I don't want to offend any Argentines listening, but in comparison to the rest of the Latins, they are a very serious race, although they're smiling at the moment because their economy is booming after going bankrupt. But it is Paris in the South Pacific, or in the Southern Hemisphere, I should say.
The blood on the hands, how does that... come about?
Well, if you need only one of the most memorable experiences I've ever had in my life would be go to Baja de Salvador, where the Portuguese in their wisdom dropped up to 5 million black slaves in the 17th and 18th century. And it's just this incredible energy there now, this mix of Portuguese, African. It's just, I can't explain it. There's a lot of violence goes on, but it makes it a very, very interesting place to travel around.
You spend time there, Graham?
No, it's interesting what Mike says, though. You know, you go to these places, and if they hit you early on in your life, they're the ones that always draw you back. And for me, it was Asia. You know, very early on in life, I sort of ended up in Asia, and just I'm a repeat offender when it comes to Asia. Just, you know, any excuse to go, and really any part. And when I say Asia, you know, I'm talking like, you know, Seoul and Taiwan to, you know, out of the way places in Thailand, and Vietnam. You know, I know that Russell's in Vietnam now, and I was there, you know, 20 years ago. Was I? No, I was there, sorry.
Yeah, 1975, wasn't it?
69 I first went, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, 95 and 97 I was there, and of course, you know, the changes that have happened since then, I probably don't even want to know about. So, you know, Southeast Asia and, well, Asia in general has always drawn me. Spent lots of time in Europe, obviously, like most people, you know, but doing, you know, kind of different things. Just, you know, like you say, Mike, it's sort of, you know, it's getting away from the the places. I mean, I think it's possible to go to Paris and not see the Eiffel Tower, for example. You know, you see it once, obviously. But then there's a lot of other things to do. And I went to southern Italy about 18 months ago and spent a bit of time in southern Italy. You know, a place where most people don't go. Most people don't seem to venture south of Rome or certainly not south of Naples. And once you get down there, I've got to say, it's not worth going to. It was bloody awful. You know, and there's reasons why people don't go there, but you don't know that until you've gone. And, you know, interesting things happened, but, you know, it was not a holiday destination, I don't think.
I think my favourite of your stories of somewhere awful is the place in Korea, that desolate island you went to.
Oh, Ulongdo, yeah, off the coast. It's always a good one with Korean taxi drivers, that. You know, you say, where do you come from? And they say Seoul, and I can say, oh, I've been to Ulongdo. And they go, oh, you've been to Ulongdo. Because nobody goes to Ulongdo unless you want to buy dried seaweed and dried fish and pumpkin candy, which is the speciality of the house. There's nothing there. It's an awful place. Surrounded, of course, by barbed wire and, you know, concrete blocks, because at any given moment, you know, somebody could invade. There's always the Chinese problem.
And you went there, why?
Got drunk. I'll tell the truth, and it actually happened this way. I was in Seoul, and I had a few days to spare before I was going somewhere else. And I'd spend a bit of time in Seoul, so I didn't want to stay around there. And I bought myself a bottle of soju and sat down and drank that relentlessly. And it's a great drink. You just make bad decisions on soju. And I was looking at this book, and it said that there were pirates had been on Ulongdo. And I was just absolutely fascinated with the idea of pirates. You know, I grew up seeing Yul Brynner playing whatever he played, Jean Lafitte or something. You know, I just thought, pirates, fantastic. And so I... you know, went to Ulongdo. But, of course, getting there was the interesting part. You know, you got to get a bus out of Seoul, this tiny, awful mock gold port, whatever it was called, and I almost missed the bloody boat, and, you know, you had to hassle with your passport. And I was only European, obviously. And it was just a great sort of adventure, and I met some young guy over there who was into Korean hip-hop, and, you know, he was trying to find himself, and he'd gone to Ulongdo to do it, you know, so that's bizarre.
Well, that's another thing about both of you, isn't there? You're great at striking up a conversation with people, and I suspect that's taken you into different places in a way that other travellers may not have. Same for you, Mike?
I think it's... I'm sitting here surrounded by two other Kiwis. As a nation, when you call me on the phone, the philosophy of travel, Kiwis have this thing about travelling, and I think... obviously, Russell's got it, you've got it, I've got it. It's sitting at the bottom of the world, so when we get out, we believe the whole world's pleased to see us.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if you're travelling on your own, if you're a Kiwi, you strike up conversations with all and sundry. If someone offers you a bed, you will travel 12 hours on foot to get there. I mean, I've heard of people in London who duck behind couches if they see a backpack, because it may be a Kiwi looking for somewhere to sleep. You know, so it's the little pearl at the bottom of the world. We are at the bottom of the world, and that's probably listening to Russell and myself. I mean, new cultures. It's the same old story, though. You go travelling, you get absolutely blown away by how other people live, and then after about year five, you start to understand where you come from. So there's two. You can do it in a combi van with other Kiwis and be cocooned, which I've done. But when you do it on your own, you learn so much more about where you've come from. It takes a while.
And you end up having your tooth taken out for a dollar.
I did in Bogota. We're blindfolded to stop the tools dropping in my eyes, I discovered. Hey, I'm a Kiwi. Someone said, we can do your wisdom tooth for a dollar. They ended up doing two. It was a three-hour operation. They didn't allow me to close my mouth for two and a half of those. I couldn't eat for a week. It was the most expensive operation I think I've ever had, really, from... health-wise.
And the anaesthetic, what, came from a bottle with a worm in it? Or?
Local anaesthetic, and they just hacked away at it. Four of them. At the, thank you, Bogota University Dental School.
And you've had work there too. You've been a piano player there. Yeah. How did that happen?
That's what got me to South America. When I left the States, I was living in New Orleans for a while. I went there to the jazz festival, and then... did the road trip, which we can talk about. We all love road trips. Went to Mexico and ended up getting work as a piano player in bars all through South America. So Bogota, worked at a beautiful place called La Boheme. And, I mean, Colombia, it's wonderful. It's just in a wonderful, fascinating, friendly people. And there was no tourists there. It was the mid-80s. A crazy country. But wonderful coffee. It's where I discovered coffee. It's just, but they are nuts.
The drug cartels, how visible is their activity?
I took a tour of Pablo Escobar's prison. You paid to go. Pablo had
had a village. He'd built himself, hadn't he?
He built it himself, and he also built a village. Everyone loved him. He kept a town going. So, I mean, the Colombians, the great Medellin, Cali, it's a different world. And as I say, it's just so fascinating. It's the unknown.
And presumably all of that money does mean that there is a prosperity there of sorts. Does it filter?
No, they seem to be very embarrassed about cocaine. Their drug of choice is whiskey. You know, single malt whiskey is, if you're a Colombian, that's what you have on your shelf when you've got the dough. And gold. Lots of real gold. Earrings. I mean, there's more money there. I mean, we forget, people in Colombia, that some businesses have been there since the late 1700s, 1800s. Single family, you know, we're just puppies on the horizon, really, aren't we?
You met many rich people on your tours, Graham?
Oh, indeed. I've met enormously rich people. Sort of been embarrassed to be in their company. That was purely by sort of dumb luck, more than anything else. I won a couple of travel writing awards, and they were sponsored by the Small Luxury Hotels of the World organization. And so, you know, they said, well, next time you travel somewhere, you can stay in one of our hotels. And indeed, I have taken advantage of that on a few occasions. I think the Mark Hotel in New York was probably among the more impressive, you know, in terms of the clientele that was there. Because it was right by Central Park, and I think it was where Johnny Depp had a fit one time. You know, people tell me this story. I don't know anything about it, but you know, he you know, threw some tantrum there, and the cops are called or whatever. Famously happened at the Mark. But yeah, I have met those people. But and by and large, they're very, very nice people too. You know, I'm going to weigh in on the side of rich people here. But for the most part, that's not where I stay at all. I just turn up in places and I'm looking for a cheap place to stay. Mike mentioned about travelling by combi van. I've had the good fortune never to do that and never to be a backpacker. I just don't like that whole, you know, Helga with the hiking boots outside your room. You know, I'm not into that at all. I prefer a small, really small hotel, generally family run, wherever I can find it, you know, and then you get to meet people.
But aren't we an amazing nation, especially Australians and New Zealanders? And I think Israelis, the other group.
Israelis travel so much.
We do it en masse. We leave. Mm. It's like we go off to war. Travel is such an important part of our psyche, I believe, as far as growing up.
But but you're most likely to grow more if you peel off from the herd at some point, presumably.
Exactly. As Graham said at the beginning, it's all about, I mean, travelling on your own, it's about silence, it's about watching. I mean, you pick up so much, and you have to meet people. Because it's the first time I went to Mexico, I'd never spoken another language. I had a week of not even speaking. I didn't even know where to start to learn Spanish. But it's that wonderful experience of just having to listen and look and watch.
And you mostly did it with only a few dollars in your pocket too, I presume.
Well, of course, I was broke the whole time. Until I got to Chile, and I took my way into a law job for a very dodgy law firm down there, which was great. Living in it's the other exciting bit is when you live in an international city. Pinochet had just left power. The place was in a very weird state because they'd had freedom for the first time in 15 years. And it was great just living and putting on a suit in a foreign nation and walking off to work. I was thrilled to be able to do that.
Some sort of sense of liberation they had, did they?
They didn't know what to do with it. I went to the first rock concert they ever had. Someone in the Wisdom brought Brian May down. He was trying to make a solo career after Freddie died, with Joe Cocker and the B-52s all in one concert. And everyone sat down through the whole concert. They didn't know what to do.
That sounds like the most improbable concert since the triple bill of Engelbert Humperdinck, Cat Stevens and Jimi Hendrix sometime in the mid-60s in London.
Amazing. Well, needless to say, Freddie didn't make a go of it. But yeah, it was a very odd experience watching Chileans who have been 15 years under the hammer sit there and they didn't know what to do.
I think we're seeing rock concerts in other countries is an amazing experience. Like in Japan, they start at 6:30 or 7 o'clock. Everybody just sits down no matter who it is. And then at the end, they applaud politely and pick up their briefcases and go home. And I've met musicians up there that, you know, they don't know what to do with themselves because at 10 o'clock, you know, they're done. You know, wow, what do we do now? Get a massage, go out for dinner sort of thing. Yeah.
It's just like the classical music for them.
It's just in the nature of the way that people appreciate music there. It's just a different thing, you know. They sit very quietly, applaud at the end of songs, and occasionally they'll go nuts for various things. I've seen sort of small guitar rock bands, you know, but by and large, no. If it's big sort of stadium rock, it's the most polite thing you've ever seen.
What kind of music were you playing in South America, Mike?
I was playing jazz and rock and roll. They love rock and roll down there. So I was making, in Chile I had a job at the Electric Cowboy, so a lot of expats would come in, and I was making better money than I was as a lawyer down there, playing honky-tonk.
Even for the dodgy law firm in
Chile. Even for the dodgy law firm, playing honky-tonk, Jerry Lee Lewis sort of stuff, and they couldn't get enough of it. But cities like Santiago and Buenos Aires are full, that's why I love them, they're full of dodgy Americans, they're full of honest Americans doing incredible things down there, entrepreneurial, and there's this incredible flow of people coming and going the whole time. So you have these international bars.
Just going back to that dodgy lawyer thing again for a moment, but you've been on both sides of the law on your way around the world, Mike. What's the story with the cells in LA? How did that happen?
I would have to say it's almost a coming-of-age story, David. My first trip ever outside of New Zealand, I found myself in the biggest jail in the world in LA County. I'd been lent a 1961 Dodge Dart by a couple of Kiwi scriptwriters in the Hollywood Hills, and I had a drink at a bar with some new friends I'd met, and I was supposedly not over the limit but on the limit, and I got lost in the LA County jail system. What I did not know is you are not allowed to bail yourself out of a jail in the States. So I was very embarrassed to be in this predicament. And I'd have to say the abiding memory would be arriving at a jail where 1,000 people arrive an hour. And I was asked if I had regulation underwear on. And I took the option to say, yes, I did have regulation underwear on. And I always remember this guard with a broken nose when I took off my clothes in front of 300 other men. He came over and put his broken nose in my face and said, "Take your sister's effing panties off."
Welcome to LA.
Yeah.
And we love LA.
Yeah, so and that's where it went, and I got lost for 2 days in LA County.
How did you get out?
Well, in the end, I did make a call because I was so embarrassed. I'd taken this car, and they said, "Use this car. If you get in the crap, we don't want to hear from you." So I was so embarrassed to be in jail. So I did ring them. And they managed to get $1,000 on a Friday night. And then all the way, when you're in this incredible system, it's like a factory. Every minute, there is a name being called out over a muffled speaker to report for release. And in the middle of my second night, deep in sleep, I heard my name. So I had to take 3 escalators down and took another day to get out of there. So $1,000 bail, I had to turn up for court hearings. But it was amazing. The next night, just to finish up on my travel, the next day I met a woman I was trying to buy a car. She gave me her apartment for 2 weeks while she went away. I saw Jerry Lee Lewis in concert. As I say, that's travel. You go from the pits of despair to the joys of living in about a space of 12 hours.
So Robert Louis Stevenson is right. It is better to travel, hopefully.
Exactly.
And come back.
Guys, thanks for sharing the stories. Maybe we'll get a chance to get some more sometime.